Star Wars theme, for those of you who have no ears and have never gone to the movies in any capacity. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah, it's the Monday morning movie reviews. It is Christmas week. Merry Christmas, everybody. We're going to be doing some Christmassy stuff each day leading up to our special Christmas Eve morning show, in which we'll have Rick Geezer with us for our annual Christmas Sports Songs edition. And yes, you will hear Honky the Christmas Goose, the greatest Christmas song of all time. That's coming up. It's 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. And you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow as well. And we are going to review the other movies, like there are any other movies, but we're going to review them and do the box office. But live in studio with me this morning are the guys who always review movies with me, Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com and more. But we brought them down to the studio this week because we're talking Star Wars, and these guys happen to be big Star Wars geeks, and they happen to have – both of them have interesting collections of Star Wars stuff. So they brought their stuff down. We'll be taking pictures and video of this stuff and putting it on our Facebook page and at WGNRadio.com if you would like to check it out on our special Star Wars-themed Monday morning movie reviews. So let's welcome Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
How are you?
Good.
All right. And Eric.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
All right. We're going to talk about – and by the way, you are wearing – Colin is wearing a fantastic
– No, Eric.
I'm sorry. Eric is – yeah, let's make sure we got this right. Colin doesn't want to be embarrassed by the stuff he has.
Oh, no. God, no. Nothing embarrassing here whatsoever.
Eric has a fantastic Hoth Christmas sweater.
Yeah.
Is that how you would – but it looks like –
I think so. Well, they got – you know, Addict's got scarves on.
I don't know what that means. The walker.
Yeah, the AT-AT.
Okay.
All-terrain vehicle.
Thank you. I don't know. Okay. All right. And there are TIE fighters and X-Wings.
Snow speeders.
And snow speeders.
Yeah.
And then the dude, that big dude.
Yeah, the Wampa.
The Wampa.
The Womp. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
all right,
this
cool.
This guy right here.
That, oh, that's right. You also have that with you. Okay. All right, well, anyway, so everybody's ready. And they've brought all of their crazy Star Wars stuff with them. And it's quite a collection, which you, again, like I said, we will videotape this and take many, many pictures and throw them online on our Facebook page and at WGNRadio.com. And I invited you guys down because the last time we did this, you brought all your crazy Indiana Jones stuff down
right
after Indiana Jones and the Crystal thing came out.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a different show this time because, you know, my plan was to have you guys come down, and I would mock you a little bit and then let you guys, you know, have your piece. But I will be joining in on the conversation heartily this morning. We will not give anything away, and it's very important that we don't. And Eric, people have been, and they seriously...
Well, there have been scumbags who were on social media even before it was released in theaters that were posting screenshots and, like, every possible twist and spoiler in the universe on any site that was running some sort of Star Wars article or anything Star Wars themed, they would go there and on Facebook. And I don't know if it's there are this group that got together that are very keyed into the Star Wars alternate universe, which is all the books, the books that came out and whatnot. And they've been threatening to spoil Star Wars because Lucas and Abrams and that are not following that trajectory. So they're idiots, they're scumbags, and if they're out there, you know, they should be arrested.
Wow. All right, well, we'll get into that a little bit later when we talk Star Wars, but we are here to review the movies. Now, none of us saw Alvin and the Chipmunks, Chipmunk Village. What's Chip? Road Chip.
Road Chip.
Yeah.
Fox is offering, since they don't have Star Wars.
Yeah.
We still have a franchise, guys.
Yeah, that's right. And they're four deep in this one. Which is really unbelievable to me. I don't know. Do you guys watch Billy on the Street?
I've seen segments. I don't watch it regularly.
He did a hilarious bit last week where he was dressed up like a chipmunk and walking around on the street and asking people if they were going to go see Alvin because it's road chip.
Yeah.
Because they're on a road trip. And he kept saying he's in a chipmunk outfit. Very funny. But anyway, so none of us saw that. But two of us did see Sisters, which is the new Tina Fey, Amy Poehler movie. And that also, oddly, came out this week. And Colin and I saw it. Eric, you did not.
No.
Did either of you see SNL?
Up to before Weekend Update.
I only saw the sketch that you posted on your Facebook page.
Okay. Where Kenan Thompson is directing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
That's pretty funny.
Where they're doing like the lesbian drama of the 40s. Lesbian, that whole thing.
Because they've done that sketch before, though.
Have they?
He's done where he's played that director, and he's, you know, basically he was from the Jeffersons.
Yeah.
And he does like the exaggerated.
Are you serious? They did that?
Yes.
How do I not remember that?
I don't know. That's why when I saw it, I'm just like, oh, okay, they're doing this one again.
Oh, man, I don't even remember that. All I know is I posted on my Facebook page and basically said, this is how I directed every show at the factory. which is kind of true, actually. All right, so Colin, tell everybody about Sisters.
All right, well, this is the latest starring Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, and of course, they are sisters. And they have opposite personalities. You know, Tina Fey plays a single mom who's, you know, slightly irresponsible and flighty, and Poehler is a divorcee who's pretty much the opposite. Their parents are played by James Brolin and Diane Wiest, and they learn that they're about to sell off their house that they grew up in as kids because the parents want a smaller, you know, living quarters. So they ask the two of them to clean out their old childhood bedrooms, which they shared, and which still have old posters on the walls and such. And they spend the night going through their diaries and reliving their past in every detail. And then finally they decide to throw one last party for themselves at this house that they grew up in, and invite everybody they once knew in high school, you know, many of whom have grown up, gotten married, have kids, settled down. And one of whom still holds a grudge against Tina Fey's character, and that's played by Maya Rudolph. And, you know, it's basically the movie is about the party itself. And the party, of course, goes from really tame because everybody's, you know, grown up. Nobody's got that party instinct anymore. And eventually it spins out of control once, you know, everybody starts drinking and doing hard drugs, thanks to John Cena's character, who's the big drug dealer. Other people in the movie are, you know, who show up at the party, John Leguizamo, Bobby Moynihan, Rachel Dratch, Samantha Bee,
Kate McKinnon.
And yeah, so, you know, this is the second one starring Tina Fey and Amy Poehler as.
Well, they did Baby Mama.
Right, Baby Mama. And was there another one in between this one and that one?
Well, they're both in Mean Girls.
They both show up in movies, but they haven't, like.
This is the second one that they were co-leads.
That's what I thought. Yeah. And, you know, considering how talented and brilliant they are, I would think they could find better scripts and better stories, because I basically had the same reaction to this movie as I did Baby Mama, whereas it's funny, but it's also really forgettable. You know, there's story elements in it that don't make any sense. You know, just trying to remember the one that stuck out the most to me, but the subplot about Tina Fey's daughter always, you know, being missing, or, you know, she can't find her. It's just dumb. Yeah. The highlight of the movie for me is John Cena. His drug rap I thought was pretty funny. But that's about it. I mean, you know, they do some. Fey and Poehler do some good ad-libbing amongst themselves. And I think they're obviously a strong comedy duo, as they've proven, you know, time and time again over the years, hosting award shows and such. But they're having that sort of, they're stuck in that sort of Chris Rock syndrome where they just can't, they're great comedians, but they can't be in a great movie for some reason. So like I said, I think you do a lot worse, but you could do a lot better too. It's funny, but also very forgettable.
Okay. I actually like Baby Mama. Did you like Baby Mama?
Yeah, for the most part.
Baby Mama was funny. Certainly funnier than this. I think this movie's terrible. And I do want to mention, extraordinarily, it's written by Paul Appel. And Paul Appel was one of the best writers ever on Saturday Night Live. One of the strongest female voices that show had ever had, and has written some of the most classic female-driven sketches in the history of SNL. Mm. She created Debbie Downer. A lot of the stuff that you see, like Colonel Angus was her and Tina Fey. A lot of the really spectacularly funny stuff that you've seen, especially from a female point of view, was Paul Appel. She's been on the show many times, you know, doing small roles. And she was always, like, very funny when she played, you know, when the hosts always ask the audience if they have any questions. She was always the wife of J.B. Smoove, who would get up and go, "Man, what you doing here?" And Paul Appel was always his wife. That's who she is. So, and she's in the movie for like 2 seconds. I can't remember the part she played, but she has like curlers in her hair at one point and comes out and starts screaming.
Okay.
Anyway, whatever. So that adds to me to the disappointment level of I think this movie's horrible. I think it's absolutely horrible. I laughed exactly twice. Once at Bobby Moynihan, Moynihan, I think, has a couple of moments in the movie because he basically does a bunch of blow and then just screams and yells like a lunatic.
Right.
But when he's trying to get somebody to guess who he's impersonating,
that's a funny moment.
I don't want to give it away even for people who want to see it. But he's doing an obvious impersonation, and he's got a caulk gun.
Yeah.
And the guy's guess at who he's doing. Do you remember who it was? I'll tell you off the air if you forget.
Yeah.
Laughed out loud at that.
Yeah.
And then the second thing I laughed at in the movie was, you know, this big party's going on, and during the big party, James Brolin and Diane Wiest, who play their parents, call the house. So Tina Fey gets on the phone. The whole place is being ripped apart. Everybody's going nuts. Party's going nuts. She walks into a room and closes the door, and Diane Wiest says, "What are you up to?" And she says, "Well, we're just sitting here watching Risky Business." And I went, okay, there you go. Nice reference. Yeah. Laugh. Got it. Okay, yeah, cool. Meta. Funny. Mm-hmm. Rest of this movie is embarrassing. I mean, embarrassing. Mm-hmm. I did not laugh. I didn't even laugh at the bloopers at the end. I was just like, I'm done. I don't even know what's going on. Horrible. And way below the level of the kind of comedy that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are capable of. And way below the level of the kind of writing that Paula Pell is capable of. Directed by the guy, not shockingly, directed Horrible Bosses 2. And I believe he directed Were the Millers. Same guy. I think.
The thing is the guy that did Pitch Perfect?
That's what I
he
thought,
He did
too,
do Pitch
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
What am I thinking of, then?
You're thinking of...
What movie came out that he directed?
I think the Pitch Perfect is the only other thing he did.
It is. Right. I'm looking at him right now. Who directed... Well, there's a movie coming out, or that just came out, that the guy who directed Horrible Bosses 2
Is it the guy who did Will Ferrell movie? Or no?
No. Was the Freaks and Geeks, one of the Freaks and Geeks guys.
No, you know what? I think it is the new Will Ferrell movie. It's the Will Ferrell Mark Wahlberg movie.
Okay.
That's the one I'm getting him confused. Okay, so this guy directed Pitch Perfect. Nowhere near as good as Pitch. So what's a disappointment on every creative level?
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. Great cast, all wasted. Any movie where Kate McKinnon is not funny?
Yeah, that's...
That's hard to do, man.
It is.
That's hard to do because she's like the funniest woman on the planet right now.
Yep.
Okay, we got to take a break. Skip Sisters. When we come back, there's this other little movie that opened up. Alvin and the Chipmunks! No, I'm kidding. We're going to come back and we're going to talk Star Wars. And we've got a collection of stuff down here that we're going to talk about and take a look at. We're going to take pictures of and video. We're going to throw it on our website and the Facebook page. Star Wars review coming up on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews right after this and the news, 720 WGN. Hey, this little movie opened up over the weekend. It made almost $240 million. That's Star Wars The Force Awakens. I have spent a significant amount of time mocking the movie. before it was released, which I was apt to do. I wanted to invite Eric and Colin down here, both admitted Star Wars geeks, grew up watching the movies. Eric and Colin, by the way, review movies with me every Monday morning here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200, facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us there. And welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Hello.
And I told you to bring some of your Star Wars collectibles and your toys and all that cool stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll get to the movie in a minute. The latest movie, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, which is Chapter 7, which picks up 30 years after Jedi. That's the time frame that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that. We'll get to reviews and all that cool stuff. But you guys brought a bunch of stuff. Before we get to that, why don't we all talk about the first time we saw it? I'll start because I'm the one that doesn't have any of the Star Wars stuff, and it'll be the quickest story. And then we'll go, you know, through both you guys, tell your stories about the first time you saw it and how it affected you and all that cool stuff. And then we'll go through your collectibles here. Okay. Came out in May of 1977. I was on the verge of turning 12 when the movie came out, the original movie, New Hope. Okay. I always refer to it as Star Wars. Am I bad for just calling it Star Wars now?
No.
Okay. All right. So this Chapter 4. All right. So it comes out.
Episode.
Oh, sorry. it comes out. I see it, you know, and it was obviously a big deal. I saw it at the Norwich Theater. First time I ever saw it, I saw it at Norwich Theater. Went with my dad and my best friend, Dan Long, not the producer here at WGN, but my best friend growing up, Dan Long. And we saw it, and I thought it was cool. I really liked it. I was like, okay, this is cool. It was fun. I thought it was great. And I really didn't think anything of it. It really didn't have a huge impact on me whatsoever. You know, over the summer of 77, I probably saw it 2-3 more times in the theater. My friends went nuts over it, though. All of my friends were just, like, crazy, thought it was the greatest movie they'd ever seen. And it was in the theaters for over a year, and that just doesn't happen anymore. I think a lot of people don't really realize that there was a time when movies stayed in theaters for months, gone for a little while, and then came back to theaters, in second run. Star Wars was in the theaters for over a year. I remember there was an ad in the paper on its year anniversary that said, "Celebrate the year anniversary of Star Wars." It had been in the theaters for a year. That's ridiculous now. Yeah. 2 weeks if you don't make any money, tops. And then then you're on DVD 6 weeks later. So I saw it a few times. Then Jedi came out in 80 and went to see that. And you have to understand that Star Wars was kind of in the theater pretty constantly up until the day that Empire opened. So you never had a lag. You know, I mean, if you had to get a Star Wars fix, you could go to the big screen and see it 2 weeks before Empire opened. That's how long it was in theaters, re-released and all that stuff. So I went to go see Empire, really loved Empire, saw that one a couple of times in the theater as well. As I got older, I got more cynical. And again, I never really grabbed onto Star Wars like everybody else did. And then the third one came out, and then Jedi came out, and I still don't like Jedi. And that was kind of when I was through with it. So that's my first experience seeing Star Wars. Was not overwhelmed by it, liked it. I was surrounded by people who it became, like their favorite movie of all time. I never had any toys, never did any collectibles. I don't think I've ever had anything with Star Wars written on it at all. So it did not impact me the way that it impacted a lot of people of my generation. So now that's sort of my first encounter with those movies. I used the word, and I didn't even mean to do that because, like, very quickly, the movie that captured my imagination that same year was Close Encounters, and that was the one that really got me. And there were no Close Encounters toys that I can recall of. Maybe there were, but I didn't get them.
So,
I mean, there wasn't like a Richard Dreyfuss playset with mashed potatoes that you could get, right?
I had a Terry Garr.
We all wish we had a Terry Garr? So, but that was the movie that. And then, like, when the fall came and that movie came out, my friends continually went to go see Star Wars. I would go to a different cinema, and I'd go see Close Encounters and then meet them afterwards. And sometimes Dan Long would come with me to see Close Encounters because he liked Close Encounters more, too. And I didn't mean to even use Encounters. That just came out. But that was the movie that year that captured my imagination. But in reality, the movie that did to me what Star Wars did to so many people was Halloween. And so I can understand that obsessiveness. I can understand the possessiveness of the movie and how it affected you. I totally get that. So that's my Star Wars experience. Colin, your first time seeing Star Wars?
First time is kind of a vague memory. I think I was 5 or 6, and I just wasn't in the mood to sit in a theater and hold still for 2 hours. I was still too rambunctious to be taken into a theater for that long of a period of time. I had already had some of the toys, so I was more familiar with the toys before the movies.
Is that the same with you, Eric?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really see the movie until maybe a year later when it was re-released for, like, it was a two-week run. It was a special two-week run at the Arlington Theater. And that's when I was like, okay, now I think I'm ready to go see this and sit down and watch it.
So we're talking like 7, 8 years old.
Yeah. And we sat in the very front row and, just loved it. I mean, just, I was able to finally tune into it and really have a ball watching it. And I think I saw Empire Strikes Back not too long after that. And I just remember now that I'm thinking about it, we're talking so much about spoilers and don't give it away and everything like that. And I remember, hearing on the playground before seeing Empire Strikes Back what the big secret was at the end of that movie.
Oh, no!
Yeah, so, but, I had no concept of it, that's a big surprise that you're not supposed to know. I was just like,
only one of the biggest shockers in film history.
Right, now. Exactly. to me, it was just like, oh, really, that's his father. Oh, okay.
Spoiler alert,
yeah,
Colin.
I didn't know that. But I still loved it. And then I remember we got a bootleg copy of it not too long ago, and we wore that thing out. And then Jedi came out, and we went opening night, stood in line in front of Woodfield, and got this little Return of the Jedi collector's magazine thing.
That's cool.
I have that.
Yeah.
Of course you do. Yeah. We'll go through that stuff too. I want to get
sure, into that. Sure.
Arlington was where you saw the first one.
Right.
Woodfield, second one.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was Woodfield.
And then the third one also was Woodfield.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you were on board the whole time?
The whole time, yeah. Okay. I mean, it was a big the toys were a big part of growing up, and I don't have a lot of them. I have very few things left, but what I do have
you have a lot of stuff here. I was just going to use the S word. You have a lot of stuff here, man.
I do have a Millennium Falcon at home. I left it at home because it's just way too big.
Because I'm not bringing the Millennium Falcon away from the house.
Well, it's not.
It's
really
under lock and key.
It's got all the decals have come off of it. It's got so many pieces missing from it. I mean, it's a shell of a Millennium Falcon. It's not worth bringing in.
It's the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. The garbage will do.
All right. Okay. Real quick. The first time I saw it was at the first movie I saw at the Norwich the first time. Mm. Then the Nortown a couple of times after that. Empire, I saw at the Esquire when it was the big Esquire. And I remember I sat in the first row of the balcony. That was great because the Esquire was a great place to see that movie. Third one, I saw the Golf Mill the day it opened. And I remember it was just a few days before I graduated high school when that one came out. All right, Eric, first time you saw it.
Well, I mean, Colin and I sort of have very similar trajectories here on how this sort of came about. Is that I specifically remember having the toys at home and knowing the toys' names and the characters and opening up and reading about them on the back and all that kind of stuff and looking at all the different characters you can get and whatnot. But I specifically remember seeing Empire, I think, first, actually, in that we saw it at the Woodfield Theater, my parents and I, and I remember bits and pieces, enough of it to go, oh, that's that character, there's the bounty hunter. And then I remember seeing the original on video and cable afterwards, and my dad buying me a VHS copy of the original, and like Collins, I wore that thing out constantly. Yeah. And then like Jedi... also at the Woodfield Theater was part of the sort of the seminal trilogy piece of my childhood, and that as far as going to the theater is concerned, because 82 is E.T.
Yeah,
that was a big deal, and then 83 was Jedi lying around the theater for that, and then the whole summer of 84. That period is really what sort of that's why I'm here today,
sure.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Everything. About it. I mean, just you knew how to play with the toys because of the characters and the music, and I had the soundtracks and everything. It was like the perfect storm of imagination and just everything you sort of want going to a movie experience to be when you're a kid.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So let's talk a little bit about the stuff that you guys brought down. And Tell me a little bit about Colin. Tell me a little bit about some of the stuff that you brought. I see your this official collector's edition Return of the Jedi. Now, is that a comic book or is it?
No, it's like a behind the scenes thing.
And they gave that out at the theater? Or?
No, I think it probably cost like $10 or something.
Oh, so you bought it at
the
theater?
So it's a nice.
Of course, they didn't give it away. What am I nuts?
I know. No, it's just got all the stuff about the special effects and how they filmed it and everything.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. It's got nice, cool photos.
Okay, cool.
I brought in some comic books, the Marvel comic books.
Marvel actually had
Marvel had Star Wars for a long time, yeah. These are from, this is probably between Empire and Jedi. Some of these that introduce a lot of peripheral characters.
All right, and these are
were significant.
Now let me ask you guys this. These Star Wars fiction writers and stuff, mm-hmm. the guys who follow the universe and those guys that you mentioned earlier who are trying to leak spoilers.
Right.
Do they even go back and follow stuff like these Marvel comics that I'm holding?
That I can't say. I know that they're very tuned into that period between well after Jedi and well before the prequels when, I forget his name, Timothy Gray, I think, is one of the guys that was first starting to write these books. And I read quite a few of them, actually, and they're actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the ones that they're really sort of key to, because those are the ones that actually follow Return of the Jedi. That's the time period that they take place. Not 30 years after,
but like right
years.
After
yes.
Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And you got it. Oh, you have an issue of Dynamite.
Dynamite magazine with Mark Hamill on the cover. Oh yeah.
Remember when Mark Hamill was going to be like a matinee idol? You guys remember Corvette Summer?
Yes. Colin got me a VHS copy for my birthday. One
is that right?
A couple years ago. Yeah.
I remember seeing Corvette Summer when it came out. I was like, oh, Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker. Cool. Let's all go see it. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, that and the lights went out in Georgia was another one.
That's right.
With Christy McNichol.
Christy McNichol and. Dennis Quaid was in that movie, based on the song by Vicki Lawrence.
Right. That's where one of those deals, they have the title, and then they come up with the movie just to fit the title, right.
And so you got the Star Wars soundtrack there.
Yeah, and I got some Topps trading cards, some vinyl here. Yeah, some little storybook.
Now, the storybook stuff, the last time we did this and you guys brought down your Raiders stuff, your Indiana Jones stuff.
Right.
The storybook thing, I take that back. We had this in the house.
The story of Star Wars?
Yes, I think everybody had that at some point.
I think my cousin had that. I have the Return of the Jedi storybook.
Yeah. Well, no, that one, I lied. That was in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe my parents bought it for me or something, but it was there. I specifically remember that thing. And I remember that thing selling big.
Oh, you know, it's because, I mean, you know, it's got somebody narrating the whole movie and the sound effects. And it's before, you know, VHS and, you know, before you could buy movies.
It was like the closest thing to experiencing the movie again without going.
Right. So you had to have that.
And they had that because you guys brought those down for Indiana Jones, too. They had those.
Yeah, I had one for Indiana Jones.
You had
also
one for those.
Collect those because they're ridiculous and geekish.
Yeah.
And then I have my Han Solo gun, which I put new batteries in tonight. So it's from the Empire Strikes Back Han Solo gun. So
the fact that it still works is very impressive.
It really is. I mean,
that's very impressive.
Yeah. It's pretty remarkable.
Okay. And hang on. Now, hold on, because Eric's got a bunch of stuff. Colin still has more. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking Star Wars. We will review the new movie. I promise. We will review the new movie. And no spoilers.
No.
I promise you, we won't. And after having seen the movie, if anybody tells you anything about the movie, punch them right in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just trust me.
For starters.
For starters. All right, we're going to take a break. Eric and Colin are here live in studio specially to talk about Star Wars, The Force Awakens. We'll give you the review, and we'll talk more Star Wars coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the All-State Studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Colin Suter, Eric Childress, live in the studio, Monday morning movie reviews. We're talking Star Wars. It's pretty much the only movie of note that mattered. Colin and I saw Sisters. We reviewed it. It sucked. So now we're moving on to Star Wars. We're talking about everybody's memories of seeing Star Wars. These guys have a lot. Colin and Eric have a lot of stuff that they brought in, toys and collectibles and things like that. We're going to talk more about that. That was from the soundtrack of Empire, but that piece of music is in the beginning of every Star Wars movie, isn't it? Like right after the overture with the scroll, doesn't the camera usually like either pan down
and pans down, you get
that theme kind of starts?
Just the beginning of it a little bit, and then it sort of shifts into whatever John Williams has cooked up for the new film, which is always something fresh and original.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's talk. Colin, you were in the middle of unveiling a bunch of your stuff. You got trading cards. You got vinyl. You got storybooks. You got magazines. You got Han's gun. Now, does he have? Mm-hmm. Is there a name for that? Not like a
just a blaster.
A blaster. That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Blast things. And then the most recent thing. It's not all old stuff that I have. I have the BB-8. Which I purchased.
Now, we're going to have to explain for those people who haven't. Well, I mean, you've seen
commercials. Should we do this now or do it later?
No. Go ahead. BB-8 is a droid that's in the new film.
Yeah. It's sort of the heir apparent to R2-D2.
Right.
And this is something that a company called Sphero put out.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Did you have to download software to control the thing?
Yeah. It's powered by an app.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And so you got a tablet with you.
Right.
And so you downloaded the app, and in order to control the remote control BB-8, you hit the stuff.
Yeah, you have to orient it first, and then you got your left, right, up, down kind of thing, and power it make it roll.
We have to get this on video.
Yeah, we'll.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it can wander around on its own. It listens to its voice activated. Also, you can shout commands at it to you can ask it.
It's a droid.
It's a droid. It's pretty much a droid.
Nick is geeking out live right now. By the way,
it's an actual droid. It's not as big as the droid in the movie.
The one thing that I sort of disappointed me of in
it's talking now.
It's talking, and it doesn't sound the BB-8 in The Force Awakens doesn't sound like the BB-8 toy, which sort of disappointed me a little bit when I heard the
BB-8 thing sucks.
When I heard the BB-8 talk in the movie, I was like, because I'd grown
all
so
that money.
I've had this thing for like 2 or 3 months, and I'm absolutely charmed by it because it sounds a little like WALL-E. You know, it sounds like
that sort of
Ben Burt.
Well,
sound.
Let's make him talk. Can you get the mic a little closer, or bring him a little bit closer to the mic?
Okay.
All right. Get him to talk. Have him say something.
Well, I have to hold.
Okay.
I actually have to hold the app or the sound comes out of the iPad.
Oh, it comes out of the. Oh, good. Actually. Okay. Well, then just bring it over to your mic.
I always forget that.
Part. Okay. Just bring it over to your mic.
But it's like you could ask it a yes or no question, and the answer is no. It sounds. That's its way of saying no.
And it was shaking his little head.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I can't really make it talk more than that. It just sort of just beeps and makes a noise on its own.
So just periodically it'll just go blah, 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 blah. Okay.
Yeah, like it's doing right now.
There we go, right there.
I really have no control over that, except for the word no. That's all I can make it
say. All right, well, there you go. Well, we're going to get pictures and video of that thing. And you spent how much on it?
$150. I was so geeked out like you were. When I saw the ad for this thing online, I was like, I got to have that. There's something about that that's just calling to me. I want to own this.
I'll tell you something. You know? If they had a rip-torn droid from Freddy Got Fingered, I would buy it.
Okay.
I understand what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
There you go. You can just leave that thing on. Let him periodically talk throughout the morning. you also have, what else is that? Now, what's one of those, what are those things called again?
Scout Walker.
That's a Scout Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Not the guy who used to be, Scout Walker. I was thinking of a different
governor.
Yeah, governor, yeah.
And then,
okay.
And then a large size R2-D2.
And that is a large size R2-D2.
Yeah, that's what they were. They were like full size figurines that came out. It was like the first run of them, and that was the only one that I got. It's supposed to opens up in the back, and you're supposed to have there should be plastic microchips in there, but I lost them, of course. So like I don't have like a,
now is there a
complete anything?
If
really.
You press a button, does it do an image of Carrie Fisher saying Obi-Wan Kenobi? Can you help me now, please, or whatever? You're my only hope.
I wish, but no, it's just cheap plastic, really.
And then you have the three set the films, the original three on VHS.
Yeah, I just
the Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, I don't think these are the first run VHSs, but they're old and the original sort of covers that you don't see anymore. So yeah, that's what I brought in.
All right, cool. Yeah. All right, now let's move over to Eric.
Yeah,
Eric, you don't have a BB-8?
I don't have a BB-8. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
and then I just brought in sort of stuff that I have basically lingering around in my office.
Yeah.
I didn't pull stuff off the bookshelves and whatnot. And I got stuff locked in the attic and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But you see, I found a bunch of action figures in my garage cleaning recently, and pulled them out. So I got an original Star Wars Luke Skywalker here.
Uh-huh.
And the
now, is that,
Jedi.
Okay. Luke oh, Skywalker. Jedi. Okay, so he's in all black.
He's got the hand
right
here. Yes.
Okay.
And I got this is the Rancor, obviously, from Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
And his mouth works.
His mouth. Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Now, that was a Jim Henson creation? Was that? No.
I don't know if that was or not.
Because I know the Jabba was, right?
Yeah.
And so were all his minions. Like
yeah.
That little dude. What's the little dude's name? He goes, hi, 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 hi.
Salacious Crumb.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
all right. And then there's the dude from Hoth.
Right. This is the Wampa.
Wampa.
That's an original, one of the original Star Wars
action figures. Okay.
Right.
And those were all from Kenner, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
all
correct.
Right.
This is the Han Solo and Kryptonite.
See, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's for holding your phone. You put your phone on.
Come on! All right, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right, I'll give you that. That's pretty cool.
Okay, and then I got this sits on my desk, of course, with the lightsaber.
It's a lightsaber. Does it light up? And it makes the lightsaber noise.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, you know, see, now it's like yeah. BB-8 is BB-8 going, what the hell, man? Yeah. Put that away!
Yeah, and this is a Lego
X-wing
fighter that I put together.
Okay, you put that together, but does it turn into an X-wing?
Yes.
It does?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you also brought a Wookiee.
I did bring a Wookiee.
All right. How old were you when you got this? And don't say 2 weeks ago.
When did the Star Wars toys come out this year?
October.
Yeah, so I was 40. when I bought this, on a date too, actually, we went to the, cause it was the day that Target released all the new Star Wars toys. It was the big Star Wars toy day, whatever day that was.
All right.
And, we went to Target afterwards just to check it out. And we each decided we were going to buy one thing. And so I ended up with this and of course,
all right, you'll see pictures
it
of
talks.
This stuff. Trust me, you'll see pictures of this stuff online on our yes. Facebook page and mm-hmm. at WGNradio.com.
Yeah.
That is a large, I mean, it's not the same size as Chewbacca, but
no.
It's a big Wookiee.
It's like Chewbacca baby.
Yeah.
Kind of, in a way.
It is.
And you can cuddle up with it. It's lovely.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
nice. And wake mm-hmm. you up by screaming in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Can BB-8 talk to Chewbacca?
I don't know. Oh, maybe.
Wait, let's here we on. Go. Here. Put it right to the mic. Okay. Okay, good. They had a nice conversation.
Yeah.
BB-8 and Chewbacca meet right here on the show. All right, let's say out all their stuff, and again, we're going to have video and pictures of it all online. So here's what we go. We're going to hang out now, and then when we come back after the news, we will review the movie, the new Star Wars movie, The Force Awakens. We'll talk about that, talk a little bit more about their collectibles, and have some more fun talking Star Wars. And we'll do box office as well. That's all coming up, although there's only one really, really big story at the box office this week as well. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every week to review the new movies. And, oh, by the way, next week we're off. And then the following week is the best of. And we'll do that, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. All right, we got a break. We'll be back right here on 720 WGN. The familiar sounds of John Williams' score. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Monday morning, and that means my dad tells a joke. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. We'll also have a very good Blackhawks Express, very exciting game last night. Blackhawks played against the Sharks, and we will have a Blackhawks Express coming up. But we're having a special treat this morning. The movie reviews, Sisters came out. Colin and I reviewed it. It sucked. So we're talking about the new Star Wars movie. It made all kinds of money over the weekend. We'll get to the box office later. But right now, Colin and Eric, who are live in studio with me, they brought down their toys and their collectibles and all kinds of cool stuff. And you're going to get to see all that on our website and with pictures and video and all that cool stuff. And but right now, we're back. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right. So, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to review the movie. And, you know, having seen it, it's important that we really don't give anything away, as you guys know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important that we don't give anything away. So, Eric, I'm going to let you take a crack at
okay,
doing a synopsis of the movie without giving anything away.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, the film picks up sometime around 30 years, roughly, after the events of Return of the Jedi. A new evil has sort of awoken in the universe known as the First Order. They're very much interested in the whereabouts of one of the previous members of the rebellion. The new sort of Darth Vader-ish like character is named Kylo Ren, played by Adam Driver, and he's one of the people in the First Order looking for this particular individual. He comes across a pilot named Poe Dameron, played by Oscar Isaac, who is also on the hunt for this person, but he's with the Resistance against the First Order. This leads us to a scavenger named Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, who's on the Tatooine-like planet called Jakku. She comes across the BB-8 droid, Colin's BB-8 droid.
Right.
Was Poe Dameron. And the droid is carrying a very crucial piece of information available for the search. So the First Order is after the droid. The Resistance is very interested in this information. There's also a stormtrooper from the First Order who has become very disillusioned on his first mission. Doesn't want to subscribe to the killing of innocents or rebels or whoever, becomes known as Finn, and he's played by John Boyega, he becomes sort of a somewhat reluctant person in this hunt, and befriends Rey on the planet, this leads to all kinds of fun and excitement, that's about as much as I think we want to give away.
Now, normally we go into a little more detail on some of the plots of the movies, and we sometimes talk about some of the things. Now, some of the conversation that Eric and Colin and I have and will have off air will be more fun because we can talk about certain moments in the movie, without giving anything away to anybody who hasn't seen it. So that's why we're being vague. And we're being vague because it's important to be vague when it comes to this movie. But we can tell people how we felt about it and our experience watching it. Before we begin, how many times have you seen it, Eric?
3 times.
Okay. Colin?
3 times.
Okay. I've just seen it once. Now okay. I feel like a like a heel. okay. Now, if you guys listen on a regular basis, you guys are friends of mine, you know my position on the Star Wars movies, and I just explained earlier, it just did not have a significant impact on my life like it did for a lot of people, especially during childhood. It just was not on my radar. Just having said that, I have spent a significant amount of time building up to the release of this movie mocking it, and especially after the... After the prequels, with the exception of Sith, which I still back, the prequels to me represent a different kind of thing, and so you know that going in that I've been making fun of it, and my intention was to have you guys come down and just take over the show and do the Star Wars stuff, and I'll mock you a little bit, and then I'll be quiet. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's not what's going to happen. But Eric, why don't you tell everybody what you think of the movie?
I love it. I mean, clearly, having seen it 3 times.
Yeah.
In just the span of under a week, there's something. There's clearly like a reattachment to this series, and as sort of the resident sort of defender of the prequels, good portions of them anyway. Watching this movie is the closest it's actually come to experiencing what it was like in 1980 and 1983 when I first saw the original sequels, the original trilogy. It has the same feel as those original movies. It doesn't betray the sort of the old characters, and it does something really beautiful in that it introduces us to these fresh new characters, which is a tricky thing in the Star Wars universe because we all know Luke, Leia, Han, and Chewbacca, and C-3PO. The characters are what we remember most about the Star Wars films. We know the stories a bit, but it's the characters we follow and their relationships and their friendships that we are really sort of the heart of the series. And now you're creating this new trilogy for a new generation and the old generation, and you're introducing it with a level of diversity that has always been there within the Star Wars universe, but not always with the sort of the main cast of characters. And they've done something so great here in that, one, they've cast the film incredibly well. Daisy Ridley has just become an overnight sensation, really. I mean, I can't stop thinking about her in the movie and how good she is, and the arc that she has throughout the movie makes me want to just follow her anywhere. All this stuff that came out much earlier in the year, just like, oh, they're having a girl, it's going to be all, girly and whatnot. That's not the case. This is not something pushing an agenda. The Star Wars universe has always been about diversity. Everyone knows each other's languages. All the creatures or background creatures are all of different races and forms and everything. And to have your main characters be, a young girl and, a black man, and to have the relationship not be something, at least in this movie, is not really hinging on a sort of romantic relationship. Their relationship falls in line with the previous films in that there's a genuine caring and a friendship that develops between these two characters, and really for everyone involved. And then to see them blend so beautifully with the old cast members, the old favorites that we remember, J.J. Abrams has really done something really special. It's not what he did with the Star Trek movies, where he was trying to pay fan service but was also trying to make it his own, and he kind of screwed it up a little bit, in my opinion. But this film, he doesn't. And he's really created Episode 4. In many ways, this is sort of Episode 4 all over again, but in a really good and a fresh way for a new generation. But it also serves as a reminder to the old generation of why we sort of embrace these films to begin with. Everything about this film works for me. Clearly, I've seen it 3 times. I can't wait to see it again and experience it with the people. It's one of the maybe the funniest of all the Star Wars films, and not just sort of cheap George Lucas-y type humor. Genuine, like, really funny stuff happens in this movie. And I adore this film.
Okay. Colin.
Yeah, I echo all of that. And I think, one of the things that I remember when we first heard about this project, coming about, and that they had selected J.J. Abrams to direct it, I think my reaction, maybe Eric's was too, was that it was like, well, okay, that's, a safe choice. It's not a very interesting choice, but okay, it's, could be worse. I mean, I like J.J. Abrams, but, he just did Star Trek and give somebody else a chance to reboot a franchise. Now I realize, that was one of the smartest choices that, Disney could have made, because he really understands what made that, first film so special. And I think another great payoff for hiring him was, first of all, they shot it on film, 35 millimeter. It's not digitally made. And one of the things I love about the film is just how tangible everything is on the screen. They went out of their way. They built, sets. They built ships to be there on the set. The planets look like, they just went on location and, wherever it was, Australia, England, Vancouver, I don't know where they went. But it's just that tangibility that just lends so much to the experience of watching the film and believing it and believing in everything that you're seeing, which I just didn't get with the prequels at all. There's so much green screen and blue screen and over-processed special effects and everything that just took away from the experience rather than enhanced it. And, I thought J.J. Abrams did just such a – and his whole crew did such an amazing job of bringing this world back to life, and really making it feel like 1977 all over again.
Yeah. Well, even when CGI is introduced, it's introduced really well. Like the main, what's the main villain's name?
Kylo Ren.
No, not him. No, what? No.
Snoke.
Yeah, okay, that guy.
Yeah.
Andy Serkis.
Yes.
Right.
Even when that's introduced, at first it was a little startling because it's the first moment in the movie that's total CGI.
It feels very Peter Jackson-y.
It's like, you know, and then when the character that, what's her name? Laquita.
Oh, Lupita Nyong'o.
That she plays in the new version of the cantina.
Yeah.
That was like, just a little. So those two, with the exception of those two characters, which seemed, you know, and it was fine. It was, I mean, and again, it wasn't bad CGI. It's great CGI.
The junk peddler too.
Yeah, Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
That character too. But again, it felt okay. Mm-hmm. It's just that they, like you said, Colin, they went so out of their way to make it feel, you know, like everything was practical, that it was there, that it was a real situation. So unlike what George Lucas did in the three prequels. So like when that, like, because I remember when I watched it, it didn't, you know, the junk dealer didn't bother me as much as when the main villain showed up. Like when the main villain showed up, I was like, man, this is a little.
Yeah.
So that's like stylistically the only sort of qualms that I would have about what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But again, that's first-rate CGI. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it just stylistically, it seems a little bit different than what I loved most about watching it. And I think you kind of put your finger on one of the reasons why I think the movie works so well. And we got a lot more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. Now, you know, for those of you who have not been on the Facebook page or on my Facebook page or anything like that, I love this movie. And I know that, like, a lot of people are like, huh? It's terrific. And I'll tell you why. I wrote a long thing on my Facebook page. Because, you know, like when after I saw it Saturday evening, I just wrote like a very quick, like, it's phenomenal. And people were like, what's the matter with you? What are you drunk? What is going on? You start drinking again? What's going on? So I felt I wanted to explain kind of in detail on my Facebook page. And I did why I felt the way I felt about this movie. It's a great movie. And it's a tremendous experience. And I think people should go and see it. And we'll talk in detail more about it. It's Star Wars, The Force Awakens. And shockingly, I thought it was great. Music from, this is the original Star Wars from 1977. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. Cochran is taking the morning off, but Andre and Dave will be driving the ship, and I'll be hanging out with them for the first part of the show to talk about the box office and Star Wars and more stuff. So I'll be hanging out till about 6 this morning on a Monday morning. My dad will tell a joke. We have a Blackhawks Express. But Colin and Eric are live in studio. They brought all their Star Wars stuff with them. Not all of it. Not all of it, but some of it, and including an actual working small droid that Colin has that can actually roll around. It's the BB-8 from the new film.
I'll just let him roam around the studio.
All right, have him roam around the studio a little bit, and he's just going to roll around on his own. Okay, so there he goes. So that's the BB-8, and we have a bunch of other stuff, and we're talking about the very minimal plot that we're giving away for Star Wars The Force Awakens. Colin and Eric have both seen it 3 times, so yeah, they liked it. I thought it was great. And, you know, and I was resistant to it. But I have to say, when the lights, you know, went down, well, no, I should say they went down during trailers, but when it went to black and I see on the big screen, I see a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And I hear the music and the Star Wars logo comes on. You can't help but go, ugh. You know, you can't help but get that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. I mean, as cynical as I am, you know, I was like, oh, boy. Okay, that's pretty damn cool on the big screen. Now, here's my thought is I was so I don't know. I had a great time watching this movie. I saw it Saturday. I went to the Village Crossing in Skokie. I saw it in 3D. Have you seen it in 3D?
Today I did, yes.
You saw it in 3D today. Okay. It doesn't necessarily, you don't have to see it in 3D. I saw it in 3D. I don't think you have to see it in 3D. So if you're wondering whether it's necessary to see it in 3D or 3D IMAX, I would just say go to the regular.
It's not necessary, but it's not bad.
No. Yeah, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's bad. Right. But as I was watching it, I was thinking, okay, well, you know, I could have saved $3.50 here.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, and still had a great, you know, great experience. So, I went in and it was packed. You know, I went on a Saturday. Like I went to, I think it was a 4:30 show on Saturday. Packed. And the thing was that you don't feel this kind of stuff a lot when you go to movies. Like when you go to a movie and like you can palpably feel excitement in the air. Like there were a ton of people in this theater who were there because they could not wait to see this movie. They were there because, like you guys, it meant something to them. Like it affected them in a way that is very important to them. It was an important experience seeing these movies when they were kids. It was important growing up with these characters and this myth and this world. While I was watching the movie, about 15 minutes into the movie, I was like, okay, you know what, man? I can't be a cynical a-hole here, and I'm not going to be, because I'm having a great time. Everybody in this room came to see this, and they're loving every second of this. And it was a great communal experience. It really was. It was one of my favorite movie experiences of the year, was sitting in there, and it kind of reminded me of the first time I saw Star Wars, and especially Empire, the couple of times I went to see Empire, because that one I liked more. And how my friends felt. And I could feel that in the room, and it made me feel good. And for 2 hours and 15 minutes, we sat in that movie together, and nobody thought about all the horrible crap that's going on in the world right now. Everybody was thinking about how great this was, how much they loved the new characters, how much they were reminded, how much they loved the old characters. And it's a great piece of modern filmmaking in terms of action, spectacle, adventure, special effects, all that stuff. It does that very, very well. It's really well crafted. It's very well made from top to bottom. We were talking about the sets, talking about production design, music, acting, all that stuff. And it's also a fantastic piece of nostalgia, but not corny. It doesn't go back and go, oh, isn't this great? It adds on to everything. And yes, you're right. It hits beat for beat pretty much the first movie. But that's okay. All right? That's absolutely okay. And what it does is it makes this, like you said, it makes it for a new generation. It passes the torch. And at times, literally. Like in the movie, literally. Mm-hmm. And there are moments in the movie that are joyous. Like you can't help but just get giddy while you're watching it and cheer. I applauded a couple of times during this movie. There are moments in this movie that will blow people's minds, like in terms of what happens in the film, like, you know, and all of it works. It is, on the simplest of levels, an extraordinarily entertaining movie of huge proportion. And I felt great watching it. I felt great to be in that room with those people watching it. And I felt great for them. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't have the kind of impact, but you know, it's one of those deals where all the joy that everybody was feeling kind of like hit me as well. And it was a wonderful experience. And I loved it. I thought it was great. And I'm going to go back to see it again. It made me forget about how cynical I had become about the Star Wars movies because, and I mean, you know, justifiably so, those prequels really pissed off a lot of people and I think stepped on a lot of memories for Star Wars fans. I think between 99 and 2005, it was a pretty sad time to be a Star Wars fan. That's just me, you know? I mean, that's the way I felt. This is a gift to the Star Wars fans. I think J.J. Abrams did a remarkable job giving the Star Wars fans what they want, what they deserve, and making it better than I think anybody thought it was going to be. So now what are there? Because, again, we can't talk about details. Right. It's hard to talk about this without getting into some of the details as to why we liked it. But I will say this. Harrison Ford hasn't been this much fun on screen to watch years. He clearly loves this role. There's no question about it. He really enjoys playing Han Solo.
Well, that's the thing. He's always kind of poo-pooed on it a bit over the years. I mean, Indiana Jones is his love. That was his character. And to see him, you know, I mean, you know, he's made fun of Han Solo on Kimmel so many times and whatnot.
Yeah.
And but it's always still kind of funny. You know, he kind of went full Shatner in a way, you know.
I know it, yeah.
You know.
Yep.
And to see him really leap into this performance, because you know, when we first heard that the old cast was returning, and that's not a spoiler. We've known about that for a long time.
Right.
That we thought that they would just be making maybe little cameos throughout the movie. I mean, Harrison Ford gets top billing. I mean, he probably shouldn't, but, you know, when he enters the movie, he becomes a living, breathing part of this film.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A major part of the movie.
Yes. But at the same time, does not overwhelm the new cast members, because the new cast and the new characters are so well drawn, so beautifully acted. All of the performances are good. I really want to learn more about Poe Dameron, because he seems to be like the nicest guy in the universe.
Well, that's another thing. You know? Oscar Isaac rules in this movie. He rules in it. And he, I think, has got the Han Solo, the modern Han Solo role.
Yeah. But less cynical Han Solo.
Absolutely. Yeah. But he's so cool, man. Yes. Like, and that's why, you know, I think it's really smart to start the movie with that guy. Like, the you know, that's your first guy that you latch onto.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, your first major scene in the movie is between him and Max von Sydow. And that, and
I love that Max von Sydow is the first person we see in this movie. That just, my heart fluttered.
I agree. Yeah. I totally agree. The casting of Max von Sydow was fantastic. Mm-hmm. We got a break here, right? And we got news? Yeah, we got news. Okay, that's what we got. I should just look at the clock. Moron. All right, we'll take a break. You guys hang on. We'll talk a little bit more of Star Wars, and we got box office coming up right here on 720 WGN. We're back here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here until 5 a.m., and then I'll hang out with Andrea and Dave, who are running the show this morning while Cochran takes the day off. He'll be back for the rest of the week all the way through Christmas Eve morning, and I'll be on through Christmas Eve morning live as well. Right now, though, Eric and Colin are here. Welcome back, everybody. And coming up in a little bit, my dad will tell a joke and much more. We'll do some Christmas stuff as well. But Eric and Colin are here. They are here live in studio to especially talk about Star Wars The Force Awakens, the new film. They brought down a bunch of their toys and their collectibles and all kinds of cool stuff. We're in the middle of having a discussion about The Force Awakens. All three of us really loved it. I plan on seeing it again. I've only seen it the one time. I was actually shocked at how much I loved it. The experience that I had was great. As I mentioned, it's one of the most fun and best experiences I've had in a movie theater all year long.
When did you start realize watching the movie that you were loving the movie?
About 15 minutes in.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty early in.
Okay.
I mean, it was. I think it was probably. It's the first attack sequence.
Mm-hmm.
On Jakku. That was when I was like, uh-oh. You know, and I love the way they... I want to talk quickly, when we talked about some of the new characters, the two main characters. I mean, we mentioned Oscar Isaac, who's a badass in it and totally cool. But the two main characters that are now like sort of the emotional core of what will be the next episodes, sorry, no chapters, next episodes are played by Daisy Ridley and John Boyega. Both of whom are great in the movie, and it's a really interesting way that they chose these two characters, because one of them has one of the characters. This is a destiny thing, okay. The other character was something that he chose to change his life. Boyega's character chose to change his life, and it was a change that he made because of how he felt about morally. About what he was doing, which is a really ballsy and interesting choice to have that be the character, especially that early in the movie. I mean, that happens really early in the movie. There's a wonderful moment in the movie that involves, like, there's a visual element. One, because all the stormtroopers look exactly the same. And so just on the simplest of levels, Abrams makes this choice to... so we can recognize what stormtrooper he is early on in the movie. But that choice is important.
Yeah.
The way that it happens, I've never seen that in a Star Wars movie before. Do you know what I mean? I've never seen that in a Star Wars movie. It was a ballsy move to do that. And not only was it clever just in terms of, oh, that's the stormtrooper that we're supposed to identify with and watch, you know, just on the simplest of levels, but it also says a lot about why that character made those choices. So smart stuff, but they're both, these people are going to be superstars. They're both going to be – both of them are great in this movie. And I want to get your feelings about their performances. But I just want to mention Daisy Ridley along with Charlize Theron are the two badasses of fantasy cinema this year.
Yep.
There's just no question about it. They both kick massive ass. And, yeah. So – and I – those two are brand new actors that I've never seen them before.
Well, John Boyega was in Attack the Block.
Oh, that's yes, he was. Yeah. Okay, so I remember him from that.
Really, that
but
was
like nothing made. Now Adam right. Driver's a different guy. Everybody knows Adam Driver. Okay, they know him from Girls. They know him from the other Oscar Isaac movie that they were together
yes,
in,
yep.
The Llewyn Davis movie. So this guy's been around. We know him. He is spectacular in this movie. Spectacular to the point where I think he should get a supporting actor nomination.
Wow.
I think he's that good. I think he's great in this movie. So let's talk about the performances of those three major characters. Colin, go ahead.
Yeah, I think they, the first time I saw this movie, I was just kind of on the edge of my seat and giddy and everything. But I really noticed the nuances of the performances more even the second time, especially Driver. I mean, we can't talk about anything, unfortunately. But, man, the second time I saw it, his performance was just even that much better, that much stronger. That it had just such a weight to it, I think I agree with you about the supporting actor. Not
terrific performance. Terrific
really,
performance.
I mean, you know, they didn't. You know, another thing about J.J. Abrams and their strategy with this film was they didn't show it to the press in time for awards consideration. They really held on to it as long as they could before letting everybody see it. And I'm grateful for that. Maybe there's still a chance, with the Academy or, anything. But really, Daisy Ridley, I've been kind of in love with her since I saw the first, teaser and then the subsequent trailers for the film.
She gets to do some really badass stuff in this movie, too, man. I mean, like, dream stuff. Like, every little girl in the audience watching this movie, there's just something, in all the other movies, only the guys got to do the stuff that she gets to do.
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
I hope this becomes the new Frozen.
And I love the way they introduce her character. They establish her character. I love that she, her living quarters, the pullback to reveal where she lives, I think is phenomenal. Just great. Great casting all around.
All right. Eric, what about the performance? Those three particularly.
Yeah. Well, Adam Driver, he's sort of now become sort of the new face of emo-centric angst on on the planet. I mean, he's got stuff in this movie that he's, I hope that they really, and I'm sure they will expand his role.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to give too much away. And then, Daisy Ridley, I mean, the way the character is written is really interesting. Like, the first time that her and Finn are together and he like notices that she's being bullied, basically. And he goes, what he does, and then he realizes, oh, she doesn't need me, and then he keeps taking her hand and he's like, stop taking my hand. And then there's the moment when she outreaches out, and it's beautifully symbolic.
Absolutely.
And whatnot. And then she does, but she's still a young person, and she's still, you can see in her face that she's still discovering new feelings and new emotions and things, and just little notes of recognition when Han Solo offers her a job at one point is a really beautiful moment.
There's a great moment really quickly, and I'm not going to get into details, but there's a great moment that takes place underneath the new cantina where she discovers something.
Yeah.
And it's a remarkable moment of heft. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, oh, my God, this is me? This is who I am? She does a great job with that, almost wordlessly, too.
Yeah. You really have to pay attention to her when she's listening to the other actors. And they're sort of telling her how she's making them feel about themselves and, how they feel once they're around her. And the recognition in her face is really quite great. And Boyega is having a blast with a really interesting character. And you really, when he's calling out her name, you could really believe that these two are friends for life.
Yeah.
You really get that in the span of just a few scenes. I can't talk about how great all the actors are in this movie.
I mean, that's the thing that, when we're talking about, a big budget sort of sci-fi action spectacle, and we've just spent 10 minutes talking about acting.
Yeah.
I got to say this, and J.J. Abrams is a guy who I mostly like his stuff. I really loved what he did with Mission Impossible. I think Mission Impossible 3 is great. Mm. I, of course, love Felicity. I mean, it's one of my great, my favorite things ever, and I always go back to he'll never top Felicity. There is a guy who shows up in all of J.J. Abrams' things, no matter what it is, and he's in this. Okay, he's in it, and I don't want to say what, but man, is this guy the luckiest actor on the planet or what? And what he gets to do in this movie?
Well, I said on the way out of, and I've thought this since the beginning, but when you see him and you see him in his outfit and whatnot, I said the twist in the next movie is that he's going to be Porkins Jr., which would just make my heart.
But it's just like, I mean, I love the fact that he's in there. Like, he shows up pretty late in the film. Yeah. It's about two-thirds into the movie. And then he shows up. I'm like, oh, of course he's in this movie. And of course he gets a kick-ass role.
Right.
You know, like a really kick-ass role. And he gets to do really cool stuff that, you know, a lot of young guys who've seen these movies are like, damn, I wish I could do that in this movie.
Yeah.
But the thing that J.J. Abrams, I think this is probably the best thing he's ever done.
Agreed.
And it's very clear to me. Very clear to me, he adores Star Wars. He adores it and cares a lot about it and really, really wanted to make a movie for Star Wars fans. You know what I mean? And that's all that people can ask for, I think.
And he surrounded himself with the right writers, too. I mean, he's got Lawrence Kasdan back and Michael Arndt, who wrote Little Miss Sunshine and Toy Story 3.
Right.
So he's got the right people, and what they figured out and – you know, I mean, it's just and the movie. You know, you want episode 8 right away. You want
as soon as it was over.
But at the same time, the ending, the ending of the movie, again, without giving anything away, is not just a beautiful conclusion to the movie. It's everything you're building up to is this moment, but it's also a cliffhanger, and it also brings you full circle to episode 4.
Yeah, absolutely right. It is, I think. The best final shot of any Star Wars movie I've ever seen.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And just like, again, there were moments in the movie that gave me the chills. There were moments in the movie that made me go, oh, man, this is so cool. I can't deny this anymore. This is awesome. That was number one. Like, that ending. Like, I applauded. Like, when his credit came up, I was just like, all right, okay.
Yeah.
I'm in. I don't care. I'm in. All right. So it's great. In other words, it's great.
Yeah.
We have to break. And then we'll come back and we'll talk about about box office, which is essentially Star Wars. But it's really, really great. And Colin and Eric and I, we all agree, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Even at 5:30 in the morning,
at 5:30 in the morning Friday.
Yeah, at the same theater you saw it. At.
Yeah,
before work.
Yeah. Then I went to work.
That's awesome.
And
then
went to work.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right, you guys, hang on. We're gonna come back. We'll talk box office. But right now, we got to take a break for some weather and some traffic. Right here on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m., but I'll be hanging out with Andre Darlis and Dave Ennett, who are flying the ship without Cochran this morning, but I'll be down there for a little while, hanging out till about 6 a.m. My dad will tell a joke, jokey time a little bit later, and we're going to talk about some Christmas stuff as well. But right now we're talking Star Wars. Star Wars The Force Awakens opened this past weekend. It's a great movie, a great experience, and a gift to Star Wars fans. No question about it. I loved it. I'm as cynical as they come, but I just, you know, early into the movie, I'm like, well, I can't be cynical about this. I'm having a great time, and I'm in a room full of people having a great time, and there's a lot to be said for that.
You know, Eric and I saw the press screening Tuesday morning, and I got to say, seeing it, we all came out of it, we're all on cloud nine and everything, but at a press screening, you can't. There's not a lot of cheering going on, even though we all felt like we wanted to cheer and clap. But I can't tell you, seeing it a 7 o'clock Thursday night show with an audience that had no idea what was going to happen, but I did. I was even more excited for them.
Yeah.
And I could feel it. I mean, just every.
Well, that's how I felt, too, was because it sounds vaguely condescending when I say that. Doesn't it? I mean, when I say I was really happy for the people in the room with me.
Yeah.
It sounds vaguely condescending, but I mean that. I mean, it's not
right.
You know, I just mean that because it's not my. It's just I don't have the emotional attachment to it that most people do. Mm-hmm. But by osmosis, I felt it while I was sitting in that room with these people, and I was like, not only am I having a great time, but more importantly, these people that really, really care about this are having a fantastic time. How the hell could anybody dislike that?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even understand how anybody would poo-poo on that. Shut up.
It's like the people that are posting stuff, and not that you were one of them, Nick, but the people that are posting stuff and going out of the way to say how much they don't care about Star Wars, I mean, particularly now. Like, beforehand, you're cynical and you weren't crazy about it. That's one thing. But for the people, like, this weekend to, like, be posting stuff and, like, here's my I don't care about Star Wars face. You know something? Right here.
That's the
finger I give to them. It's like, why do you want to spoil people's joy?
Yeah,
you know, it's not like we're rubbing it in their face.
It's like
you see a lot of people enjoying themselves at a party, and you just want to go there and pee on them.
Right. No, I agree. I do. I've often peed on people. That was when I was drinking. all right, let's talk about it. You last week, Eric, you predicted $230 million.
Yeah,
not bad, man.
Because
it made $238 million. You were only $8 million off.
Yeah,
that's a That, now, how big is that in terms of, like, record?
Well, it's $30 million more than Jurassic World did this summer.
I still can't believe that movie made that much money.
No one can. I mean, but at the same time, we're talking about nostalgia. We're talking about a new generation of people that, you know, I mean, it's 20 years some after the original Jurassic Park.
Yeah, that's true. But, man, this movie is so much better.
Of course it is. And I think anyone who saw Jurassic World would tell you that this is a better movie. I mean, I don't understand that people really, really like Jurassic World.
Yeah.
You think it's okay, fine. But, like, don't tell me it's really not good.
I, you know.
It's not good.
Some people got eaten by dinosaurs.
But it's $30 million more than Jurassic World did. It's the biggest Thursday night previews of all time. It had $57 million just on the Thursday night previews. It was $120.5 million on Friday.
On Thursday, Friday alone.
Yeah. So that was the biggest one. And then Jurassic World, I think, beat it on Saturday and Sunday. The one day.
Come actually. On.
Yeah, well, because it was so front-loaded on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
You know, only so many. You know, that's really why. It wasn't a huge beating. It was really just by a couple of million. But still, we're talking a $30 million.
How long is this going to sustain?
It's a good question. If you look at everything that's opening between now and, say, like, Batman versus Superman, it's not impressive. You know, you're going to have your Oscar. You got your Hateful Eight and Revenant, and people, adults are going to go out and see those.
And The Forest.
And The Boy.
You know what's really funny is, like, when I'm watching television and I keep seeing commercials for, like, you know, The Revenant, and I see commercials for Hateful Eight and all these other, like, you know, end of the year Carol and all these other movies. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a 2015 release. We're getting in January. And then all of a sudden I see a commercial for, like, The Forest, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it is January. I forgot. Oh, yeah. The new crappy movies are coming out. I forgot about those.
Well, I think that this film has the potential to be Titanic-ish in a way, in that it plays into, like, into February, maybe into March.
Oh, I agree, man.
Yeah, a lot of repeat viewings.
Oh, I'm going back to see it again. Yeah. I never expected that I would go back and see this movie again. I'm probably going to see it a couple of more times.
Yeah.
So, all right. I got to say, I'm $14.4 million for Alvin and the Chipmunks. I actually expected worse.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was going to do like $9-10 million.
Well, these movies make money. For some reason, the first two did over $200 million, and the last one did $130 some million. So this is the weakest of the Chipmunk movies. But you know, Fox has got to eat too. They don't have Star Wars anymore.
$14.4 million for Alvin and the Chipmunks. And I asked you via text. I said, is Alvin and the Chipmunks going to benefit by sold out performances of Star Wars? Like, are you going to say, come on, kids, let's go see Alvin and the Chipmunks?
Well, I mean, I guess it helps that Star Wars is PG-13, and that might be taking some parents away.
Which is a ridiculous rating.
It is, really.
It's a ridiculous rating
for the
movie. It should just be PG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is this the darkest Star Wars yet? No, it's not even close.
No.
I mean, but how would you like to be that kid, though? Like, you show up for Star Wars, and it's sold out, and then your parents go, well, we could go see Chipmunks.
Yeah.
Thanks, you know, the most disappointed child ever.
Thanks for thinking
ahead. Here's the thing. If you go to the movies and Star Wars is sold out, go see Creed.
Take the kids. Yeah.
You see the Onion headline? The picture of a guy in a Chewbacca outfit and standing in line at a theater. And the headline is, man in Chewbacca suit is trying to decide between Star Wars and The Big Short.
All right, on that note, we got to end it. But Sisters made $13.4 million.
Not good. No.
Star Wars is the story. All right, listen, guys, thank you so much for bringing your stuff out.
Yes, sure.
It was a lot of fun playing around with the BB-8, and we're going to take some pictures and all that cool stuff, and we'll put them online on our Facebook page. But Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, $238 million over the weekend, an extraordinary amount of money and a pretty extraordinary movie. Thank you guys so much for coming down, it's great.
Yeah.
And everybody should see it. Yep. All right, let's take a quick break. You guys hold on a second. And we got news coming up right here on 720 WGN.